From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. American breakfast may not mean what you think these days. Bacon, eggs, and toast? Maybe, or maybe not. A big bowl of cereal? Well, ask Kellogg's. Sales are down. Whether it's Greek yogurt or a green salad or a power bar on the way to work, breakfast is changing. And our health and habits, changing with it. This hour on Point, what's for breakfast now? You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. How have your breakfast habits menu changed? What's your new way? How's it going? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me first today from New York is Devin Leonard, staff writer for Bloomberg Businessweek, author of the big Businessweek cover story this week. Cover story headlined, "Who Killed Tony the Tiger? Carbs, Sugar, and Stubbornness Are Killing Kellogg." Devin, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Oh, no, thanks for having me.
What is up with Kellogg profits and in particular with its sales of cereal?
Well, I guess it's the apocalypse in Cereal City, Battle Creek, Michigan, which is where Kellogg is headquartered. They've had seven down quarters in a row, and they're basically told Wall Street in February that cereal sales aren't going to be up in the coming year. They're threatening to close one of their four cereal factories in the United States. So they've got a big problem. They're the world's biggest cereal company.
We'll look at why that's happening. Take us back. The Kellogg story is kind of an incredible story. You go back to Will K. Kellogg. He and his brother and their spa and the kind of invention of breakfast cereal. Take us back to that, Devin.
Well, basically, this is a company that has defined breakfast for nearly a century. I mean, the two Kellogg brothers, there's John Kellogg and his younger brother, Will K. Kellogg. They were running a sanitarium in Battle Creek, Michigan.
And sanitarium for what? For tuberculosis sufferers or?
Well, not quite. One of the issues back in the late 19th century was indigestion. And people who were wealthy would, pay to go out to Battle Creek, Michigan, and they would get these sort of very, very exotic treatments that included, you know, all sorts of enemas and hydrotherapy. And because the Kellogg brothers were Seventh-day Adventists, though, they couldn't serve them, you know, a hearty eggs and bacon breakfast. They were vegetarians, and they had to come up with something else. And what they came up with was the cornflake.
What did people typically eat for breakfast before the cornflake in those days?
Well, I don't know so much about the wealthy people, but generally speaking, a lot of people just got up in the morning and ate leftovers from what they'd had the night before.
Okay. So they figured out how to flake corn and we'd get corn flakes, and it just took off like crazy.
Well, there's a little bit more to the story than that. Mm-hmm. Will K. Kellogg was a sort of a financial guy, and he wanted to turn corn flakes into a business. His brother was more religious, and I guess he didn't like the idea. And by the way, he also didn't like the idea that Will K. put sugar in Kellogg. They had a big battle over who would get to use the family name. Will K. won, and okay, he created Kellogg, and that's the company we know now. Of course, it's done better in decades past.
Sugar, and not just a little sugar. I think I was reading in your report with some of these. Was it Sugar Smacks? 57% sugar by weight. Honey Smacks.
58%.
58% by weight. Good heavens! It really took off once it got married up with television when Kellogg met Leo Burnett, the famous advertising genius.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, he's a legendary guy on Madison Avenue. Whether or not you've heard of Leo Burnett, you've heard of many of his creations like the Marlboro Man and the Jolly Green Giant. And what he did for Kellogg was he created, or the people at his shop created, Tony the Tiger, Toucan Sam, the Snap, Crackle, and Pop, who are so the Rice Krispie Elves, and on and on. And they also revolutionized advertising on cereal boxes. So that was, you know, the combination, and also television. He was one of the first believers in television. He convinced Will K. Kellogg, who at the time was about 90 years old, to invest in advertising, his products on the Howdy Doody show and early children's programming like that. So you know, that's a pivotal moment for not just for the cereal industry, but Madison Avenue too.
Kellogg, you remind us, still spends more than $1 billion on years, and in spite of that, sales of 19 of their top 25 cereals eroded last year. And they've got big ones: Frosted Flakes, Rice Krispies, Corn Flakes, Fruit Loops, Apple Jacks. What's going on? What's the headwind that cereal sales are facing?
The headwind is, as people would say on Wall Street. Well, it's coming at Kellogg from pretty much every direction. I mean, you know, essentially, one of the things that's sort of amazing, especially if you're somebody who's grew up eating cereal, it's hard to think of anything more convenient than just pulling out a box of cold cereal and a carton of milk out of the refrigerator and just eating. And I guess that's why I guess people my age and younger too would have grown up eating cereal for breakfast, maybe a little cereal for lunch, and maybe some cereal for a bedtime snack too. But nowadays, people are a lot busier, and so they want convenience. They want something that, a breakfast bar or something that they can grab on the way to work, or yogurt. And then at the same time, they want more nutrition. And so that's a great thing for yogurt, because yogurt's both convenient and nutritious. But it also means, I guess, people are looking for GMO-free breakfast. They're looking for, organic breakfasts, and all of those things are not good for Kellogg, which is a lot of sugar, a lot of carbs, and I guess isn't perceived as being convenient anymore. Cereal, that is, too. Not just even for General Mills and Post, too.
That's wild. Not even convenient. They're still out there advertising like crazy. You may have seen their latest, a father and son.
Share what you love with who you love. Kellogg's Frosted Flakes.
Is up. And it's good.
Good. They're great.
Yeah, but not everybody thinks so anymore. Here's the sound of a man making a green smoothie with spinach and fruit in a Vitamix blender. Ah, the sound of breakfast in the morning. I see Kellogg's introduced a new peanut butter and jelly Pop-Tart, Devin. That doesn't sound like they're getting on the no-sugar, low-carb bandwagon.
Well, they're sort of in a difficult position because really the sugary stuff still sells. I mean, cereal is still an $8 billion business in the United States. It's still the top-selling breakfast food. It's just that it's starting to shrink, and these are companies that have been traditionally used to high growth. But they did well. Kellogg did well with Applejack last year, advertising Applejacks to adults, as a late-night snack. And General Mills did well with Cinnamon Toast Crunch, too. It's just that those success stories don't offset the larger trend, which is, cereal sales going down. And as you mentioned, 19 – in Kellogg's case, 19 of the top brands losing share last year. So, it's really tough for them. And that's why the future of these companies is really in question now.
As Americans look around and find other ways to go with breakfast, which means other ways to go with their nutrition, starting the day off right there. Devin Leonard, please stand by at Bloomberg Business Week in New York. With us right now from Baltimore, Maryland, is Alice Lichtenstein. She's professor of nutrition science and policy at Tufts University. Professor Lichtenstein, thanks very much for being with us.
Nice to be with you.
And with me in the studio is Mary White, professor of food anthropology at Boston University. Mary, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
It's great to have you right here. Alice, we saw these new guidelines that came out, thinking of breakfast here, about eggs. You're vice chair of this 2015 Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee, notably recommending less meat, sugar, refined carbohydrates, but not necessarily limits on unsaturated fats, and talk of cholesterol there as well. Do eggs have the green light again for breakfast, Alice?
Well, just to be clear, there actually are recommendations on restricting saturated fat, and that does tie in with the egg recommendations. So in terms of saturated fat, we're still recommending less than 10% of energy. But
so watch out for the bacon. Watch out for the sausage.
Exactly. That's the thing, that the way eggs are frequently consumed in the United States are with bacon and sausage. So what we really need to do is separate the eggs from what we normally consume the eggs with.
Are eggs okay now for breakfast? I remember many years, when people went to carbs in part because they were told to keep away from eggs and cholesterol.
A limited amount of cholesterol seems to be fine within the context of what we're currently consuming, which is about 250 to 350 milligrams per day, and that's an egg has a little under 200 milligrams of cholesterol per day. It does not have a major effect on LDL, the bad cholesterol, for most individuals. Now, there are certain individuals who are hyper-responders, and those are the ones who are at increased risk of cardiovascular disease, and they're in a different category. They should be in contact with their healthcare provider, and usually they do have to restrict cholesterol. But as far as the majority of the population, an egg a day or a couple eggs every other day does not seem to have a major impact.
Nutrition's a big deal. We'll look more at it. Mary White, there are also changing tastes. How do you see the idea of breakfast changing in our country culture, Mary?
It's very interesting to think about the arrival of Kellogg's, which changed our breakfast in America all by itself. You know, suddenly there was a thing called breakfast, which had
breakfast
a code.
Cereal. Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And that's what breakfast meant. And again, now, even before Kellogg's had these unfortunate experiences, I think we had already moved to a variety of breakfasts that were more personally determined. They weren't coded by family. You know, this is what we've always had for breakfast. They weren't even coded by your ethnic background or anything like that. So you had people saying, well, my breakfast is cashew butter on sprouted wheat toast,
yes.
Or my breakfast is sautéed spinach with shiitake mushrooms dashed with ume plum vinegar. You had all these different breakfasts that were idiosyncratic.
People going in lots of directions and what others following. I mean, Devin, we had the head of Kellogg's U.S. Breakfast Foods Division went up at the helm of Chobani. Greek yogurt sales skyrocketing, Chobani $1 billion a year.
Yeah, and he's gone back to Kellogg, and he's now they're putting him in charge of their Kashi division, which is doing very badly. So
maybe,
I don't know what to say about that.
Maybe he'll save it. Maybe he won't. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Scramble, scramble, scramble in the morning. Butter still warm on toasted rice. Scramble, scramble, scramble in the morning. I like my scrambled in the morning. You like your sunny side. I like my scrambled in the morning. You like your sunny side. Say Marlene,
yeah.
Marlene,
what?
Move over, bacon, want some sizzling. Marlene, brew up the bean, fresh squeeze, me some tangerine. Skillets hot, the aroma's fine. How do you like your
unfertilized?
I like mine scrambled in the morning. You like your sunny side. If I like mine scrambled in the morning.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what's for breakfast. It is changing in this country. Kellogg's has seen that. Cereal sales way down. Greek yogurt has taken off like crazy, and a whole lot of other things too, as Americans' taste and nutrition consciousness changes. There's plenty of old breakfast stuff in the air. A little advertisement here for Jimmy Dean's breakfast sandwich on the go. Woman about to eat toast for breakfast. Jimmy Dean's son intervenes.
So this is breakfast?
Uh-huh. Toast.
Toast, schmoes.
Hey, just watching my calories.
Well, how about a tasty Jimmy Dean Delight sandwich? It's got turkey, sausage, egg whites, and cheese.
Sausage and cheese? I don't know if that's going to make Alice Lichtenstein's filter for us. She joins us from Baltimore, professor of nutrition science and policy at Tufts University. Mary White is with us, professor of food anthropology at Boston University. And Devin Leonard, who covers the business of Kellogg's and much more here, has written about that in his big cover story, Who Killed Tony the Tiger? Americans going in new directions. Here's Giada De Laurentiis preparing an updated breakfast version of the classic BLT.
Breakfast PLT. Rise and shine from my pancetta, lettuce, and tomato, piled high on a mini bagel and topped with sunshine.
PLT stands for pancetta, lettuce, and tomato instead of bacon.
Pancetta, a little thin-sliced ham there maybe, or here from the Food Network's Cooking for Real, Sonny Anderson whips up some breakfast enchiladas.
My breakfast enchiladas feature a tender scramble of eggs and homemade turkey sausage wrapped in a soft flour tortilla, then smothered in my cumin-scented tomato sauce, topped with cheese and baked until bubbly and delicious.
Cumin-scented tomato sauce. Mary, the grandma would have fainted at the smell of cumin in the kitchen.
Depends whose grandma we're talking
maybe,
about,
yes,
doesn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it does.
One of the fascinating things is that we're going back to all of this work in the kitchen. When Kellogg's tried to introduce us to efficiency and the modern thing was to get it done fast. And, of course, the working woman needing something easy to make or put in front of her family.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Devin said even a bowl of cereal was too much trouble. If that's the case, what do you mean work in the kitchen? Or are we going more ways than one at once here,
well,
I guess?
Yeah. I mean, that's the irony, is that it started out in the home economics movement when mm-hmm. the kitchen was going to express the modernity of modern life. And then it went to, it's kind of like this thing that became something easy to eat that a child could make for himself without mom in the kitchen, oh dear. And then you got to this backlash. We're going to make the breakfast burrito in our own kitchen, and we're going to add the cumin, and we're going to do all this amazing work to return to artisanality, the handmade breakfast. This is really fascinating to me.
If you've got time for that, that sounds really great. Artisanality. Alice, Devin, I want to get your thoughts on that. We've got so many people lined up here with their breakfast evolution. Tim in Menominee, Wisconsin. Tim, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. What's for breakfast, Tim?
Hi, Tom. Recently had a heart attack. I'm 29 years old, which, of course, means very young. And I've done a lot of changes. I've cut most of the sugar out. So basically, I'm no cereal. On a busy morning, an apple or two on the way out the door. When I have a little bit of time, when I actually wake up on time, I like to do any combination of beans and eggs and, you know, spinach, basil, sriracha, guacamole, some salsa and all of that, you know, some combination of that in a tortilla and out the door. And honestly, it only takes 4 or 5 minutes to whip something like that up, which is about how long it takes to eat a bowl of cereal.
And Tim, if we had seen your breakfast 2 or 3 years ago, what would it have been?
A bowl of shredded wheat or a bowl of, you know, something with sugar on it, most likely, and a lot of milk, and not the recommended serving size.
Right, and right, plenty of it. Now we've got sriracha and more, a tortilla going on there in Menominee, Wisconsin. Tim, good luck. Eat right, man, and live long and prosper. Lily in Dixon, Tennessee. Lily, you're on.
This is so interesting to me. Cereal is the most frustrating aisle in the mainstream supermarket today.
Well, I have some ideas about why, but what's yours, Lily?
Well, this is, I mean, I grew up on Fruit Loops and Tony the Tiger, and I love Kellogg's. It just sort of represents a very old part of America. I think it was novel at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But really what you get, there's so many varieties of Kellogg's types of cereals in the aisles. They just don't really offer much in return for what you have to pay. They're very expensive. They have very little nutritional value. You really don't get a whole lot what you pay for. They're more novel for kids
to
look at the boxes in the morning while you eat. But I think people are just learning to make more wise choices. Now, if you go into other maybe non-mainstream stores or in the health food section, you might find some better values. So, I mean, I hate the idea that Kellogg's is going down, but because we love them, but maybe if they just rebranded and kind of, you know, figured out maybe how to change with the times of people's changing taste.
I mean, it may take more than rebranding to sell sugar and carbs these days, especially after this latest dietary report. Alice Lichtenstein, Lily, thank you for your call. Alice, do you have the sense that overall, I mean, Devin's right, we still sell and buy and eat a ton of sweet cereal in this country, but overall, at the change edge of change, are we headed in a more nutritious direction, Alice?
I think in some cases we are headed in a more nutritious direction, but in other cases my red flags are going up. A lot of those breakfasts that I was hearing about from the cooking shows were very high in sodium. They were low in whole grains and high in refined grains.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to take into consideration all components of the breakfast and most of our meals and not just look at the eggs or another component. So in some cases, by giving people more flexibility and to allowing them to personalize their breakfast, regardless of whether it's fast or slow, I think it's also important for them to take the whole meal into consideration and probably give them a little more guidance about how to cut salt, how to increase some of the fruits and vegetables that can be incorporated in, and also choose the whole grains.
People headed in lots of directions here, away from the cereal shelf maybe. Reggie in Yorktown, Virginia. Reggie, you're on.
Yes, cereals are just too sweet. My breakfast is a soy burger on whole wheat bread.
Soy burger on whole wheat bread, and are you one of these people? Breakfast is one of those meals where a lot of people do the same thing every day. Is that you, Reggie?
That's me. Every
Sounded
day.
Like
that's my life state. It starts my day.
Sounds good. Mary, how about it? You know breakfast can be a real repetitive thing, not just in this country, but in a lot of countries. It's something very familiar and very standard every day.
That's right. I think breakfast being the thing you have first in the morning, you're still kind of vulnerable. You've woken up. You want something comforting and predictable. There's a nostalgia associated with breakfast that goes back to your childhood. In many parts of the world, breakfast isn't breakfast without rice. breakfast isn't breakfast without miso soup in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, in Japan, they have toast, wonderful toast.
These days.
But the problem in America, I think, is a lot about class, about economics of eating.
Well, why exactly? Because as Lily was saying, that cereal aisle, especially with how skinny and small the boxes have become, it's a pretty expensive aisle.
That's right. And at the same time, you have food deserts in your cities where there is no fresh food available. So you're shopping at the gas station and you're picking up candy bar. You're picking up, you know, all kinds of things. I mean, relatively speaking, that cereal with all the sweeteners, however expensive, would be a better option than some of the breakfast people have to have.
So where do you see breakfast going that may have an intersection of interesting taste that captures the contemporary palate and good nutrition, Mary?
Yeah, I think those people who can, as Michael Pollan says, shop the periphery of the supermarket, go for the fresh things all around the edge, those people are going to have an advantage. Of course, those people need to have the time to prepare those fresh ingredients, and that's an issue. But I think you're going to get more and more individuated or this is my breakfast kinds of plates in front of you.
Our caller with his soy burger and whole wheat bread.
Absolutely. Sounds great, I guess. but you're also going to have people looking at other people's ethnicities, and you're going to get people looking at foods that they don't normally eat. That breakfast taco in Austin, Texas, everybody goes for it. And that has good nutrition in it.
You've got some breakfast right here on the table. What is this? This looks like toast with something, like a schmear of something here.
It's a schmear. It's a Singaporean toast that's a product of British colonial movements.
Yeah.
And
toast.
That's another thing. You look at the meals of different countries that had other experiences along the way, you get this layering. So what this is toast with butter and something called kaya, which is a mixture of coconut milk, eggs. It's a custard it's a coconut custard with a lot of egg in it. It does have eggs, but it's also pretty nutritious. And it is a staple of Singaporean food. Now,
it's kind of a pale green smear on top of toast. Now, Alice, you can't see this, but you're hearing coconut milk and eggs. Sounds like a cholesterol fest.
Well, and also I heard butter. So if it's being consumed in a reasonable quantity, then I don't think we need to be too concerned. Hopefully the custard is made with non-fat milk because there also may be a fair amount of saturated fat there. Is the toast made with whole grains? We know that currently people aren't consuming enough fiber. You get that mainly from whole grains and whole fruits and vegetables, and they're not consuming enough calcium, which you get from dairy. So just as long as the saturated fat is held at bay, then it's reasonable.
I just had a nibble of this kaya. It's absolutely delicious. Of course, I don't know. I mean, Devin Leonard, if Americans are going off toward, you know, Singapore coconut spreads, does Kellogg's have a chance?
It has a chance. These cereals still phenomenally profitable, and like we were saying before, they still sell a lot of it. It's just that their proposition to the investing community is we're going to keep growing like we have in the past, maybe not next year, but eventually, and that cereals is a growth category. But essentially, they're going to have to – at some point, they're going to have to say the business model's changing and, you know, we're going to use this cash and spend this on something else. The problem for those guys is that in 2012, they used a bunch of that cash to buy Pringles, whereas General Mills bought Yoplait, yogurt, which I think everybody thought was a lot smarter. So I think there's, as I say in my story, I think that there's a big question about the management there. I mean, Kellogg's has a bigger problem than just
moving from Honey Smacks to highly processed potato chips. I'm not sure they deserve to live long and prosper. Ramsey in Stillwater, Oklahoma. Ramsey, you're on the air.
Hi, my name's Sarah. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just recently started drinking really healthy smoothies in the morning for breakfast.
What do you put in there?
I put in a really high quality protein powder, some fruit. I put in almond milk and kale or spinach and some dates I put in for sweetness. So I'm really trying to stay away from carbs, but especially sugar.
And is that it? I mean, there's a lot in there. You whip it up, gulp it down, and that's your breakfast?
It is, and I'm surprised because I used to start the day with, you know, just a piece of toast with peanut butter, and I would be hungry by, you know, 9:30 or 10, and with this, you know, I can go all the way until lunch, really. It really fills me up. It's fantastic.
It sounds pretty terrific. Alice Lichtenstein, what about the whole smoothie front? And this menu for the smoothie out of Stillwater, Oklahoma, almond milk and kale and spinach and dates. As a nutritionist, what are you thinking?
Oh, I think that it sounds like there are a lot of good things in it, and particularly because you've got almost all the food groups there. So this is one option for some people. Other people, it's very important for them to be able to chew, and that's what satisfies them. So I think we need to think more in terms of personalizing what works for me. But I also think we need to be careful about talking about cereals as one big entity, that there's a wide range of different types of cereals, and in some cases, we are particularly critical about certain ones because they're really high in sugar and refined carbohydrate. But we have to realize there are some cereals that are quite good, that are made with whole grains, that aren't made with a lot of sugar, and they do serve as a vehicle for getting milk in us, which provides calcium and vitamin D, particularly for children.
Let's go to Eddie in Atlanta, Georgia. Eddie, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I eat GMO-free and gluten-free cereal and oatmeal. And I add almond milk and flaxseed and organic fruit and toasted pumpkin seeds.
But you're making a kind of a baseline health calculation, gluten-free and GMO-free, right at the top of that menu, Eddie.
Correct. And also the organic also, which, you know, eliminates the pesticides and the other ingredients that farmers may use, conventional farmers, which I believe makes it less healthy.
Eddie, we've got the menu. Devin Leonard, some of Kellogg's competitors have gone here. I think there's gluten-free or GMO-free Cheerios now from General Mills.
Well, you have to be fair, Tom. There aren't any GMO-free oats.
Am I wrong?
I'm sorry. No, I'm sorry. There's no GMO. There's very little GMO-free corn.
Right.
It's easy to get the oats and Kellogg's
are oats. Yeah.
Right. And Frosted Flakes and Corn Flakes, which are Kellogg's products, are corn-based. So Kellogg is trying to move in that direction. But at the same time, as I say in my story, they're also fighting attempts in various states for companies to show consumers whether or not they have GMO products in their GMO based ingredients in their products. So that's alienating consumers too. So anyway, it's just ironic.
Mary White, here's John writing us on Facebook saying, "I eat lunch for breakfast." Maybe the whole construct of breakfast is sort of drifting a bit.
I think it's really important to mix it up a little bit. And Americans are getting used to sweet breakfasts, and savory breakfasts are, I think, at least as important and really good for you. One thing I'm hearing in a lot of the respondents is, I eat. And I'm thinking, you know, where's the family breakfast? Where's the place, you know, in the Norman Rockwell paintings where everybody's sitting around?
Maybe it's on Saturday or Sunday.
Yeah, so what are they eating?
People out the door. Maybe that's where we blow it out. Today is National Pancake Day. Somebody just whispered in my ear. Maybe that's Pancake Day. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, I think the menu is probably very different when the family is sitting down together from when it's an I eat breakfast where you're grabbing what you need or what you believe in as a breakfast.
In our house, that's the day that things always got less happy on the nutrition. That's when all the buttery croissants and the big egg concoctions would come.
Yeah, and that's where brunch.
Very delicious, but maybe not quite as healthy. Alice, I don't know, maybe the shorter time for prep sometimes can push us in a good direction. You don't go for the big elaborate buttered up eggs.
I think it really depends on the individual family and the individual's motivation as far as preparing. You can spend a lot of time preparing a very healthy, nutritionally sound breakfast, and you can do that in a relatively short period of time. And the opposite is true also. So it really depends on what gets picked. And there are times where you may want to splurge on something, but it should be more the splurge, not every week or every, you know, or twice every weekend.
Alice Lichtenstein, please stand by in Baltimore. Mary White with me right here in the studio. Devin Leonard in New York with Bloomberg Business Week. We're talking about what's for breakfast in America today, that sort of nutrition start to the day. This is Chitty Bang with breakfast. They can't fade us too. Matter of fact, look at what you made us do. Yeah, look at what you made us do. Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about what is for breakfast in the United States these days. Numbers show Kellogg and Beyond cereal consumption way down. Not just that, OJ way off as well. People are a little worried about the sugar and calories in orange juice, apparently, these days. And all kinds of new breakfast foods and habits coming to bear on our bodies, on our nutrition. Alice Lichtenstein is with us, professor of nutrition science at Tufts University. Mary White is with us, professor of food anthropology at Boston University. And Devin Leonard with Bloomberg Businessweek joins us from New York. His big cover story in Businessweek is Who Killed Tony the Tiger? Kellogg struggling against those headwinds facing traditional cereal consumption in this country. Here's Quaker Oats from the 1950s. Oatmeal's the thing.
Quaker Oats and Mother's Oats. A hug, a kiss, and a good hot Quaker Oats breakfast. The best school day start you can give your youngster. For just as his soul is nourished by a hug and a kiss, so will his young body be nourished by a good hot breakfast of Quaker Oats.
Oh boy, hugs and kisses and oatmeal. But here's Key and Peele from Comedy Central's show. Jordan Peele plays an enthusiastic hotel guest who takes full advantage of the hotel's complimentary continental breakfast.
All of the European countries lay before me. Where should I fly to first? The pit of the donut. Thank you, Turkey. Buckle up. Let's see where we shall go next. The Danish. Clearly from Brussels. Hello, Greece, where the yogurt flows like water. Yes. Like go-good, but to stay.
That's a little bit too much Jordan Peele for me, snorting the yogurt there. I don't know. Our listeners, all kinds of directions these days. Here's garlic pasta from one. We've got everything going on here. But here's Ja says, I grew up with American, Dominican, and Guatemalan breakfast. So, yes, there's the American stuff we know. Then there's Dominican. Mangu, the plantain dish, boiled and mashed with butter, served with sautéed red onions and eggs and Dominican cheese or salami. Or Guatemalan, refried beans with toast or tortilla, eggs, some Guatemalan bread or sweet bread. Make a sandwich out of it. Lots of directions to go in here. Chris says, oatmeal, eggs, whole grain toast. It's cheap. A lot of the breakfasts being described by callers have expensive ingredients. Mary White, oatmeal will fill you up for not too much.
That's right. And oatmeal is kind of a background food. People had porridges of all kinds, grain-based porridges, which were, in the day, they were probably pretty good nutrition. As the grains got kind of denatured by processing, maybe not so much. But the iconic English breakfast, used to be porridge, and then it became, after the war, the big English, the full English breakfast with gammon ham and fried tomatoes and fried beans and everything that you could imagine, as a sign that the working class was moving up. Mm. And the more of the bad things you put into it, the more likely you were to show that you were no longer impoverished.
Bangers and mash. Rose in Worcester, Ohio. Rose, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. How's it going?
All right. I'm getting a little hungry, even though I had my breakfast.
I know. Me too, right? I am definitely a savory girl for breakfast. I like the sprouted seed bread, eggs, and avocado, and I like my cereal for supper. So it's kind of like almost a switcheroo to not a heavier meal, but kind of a heavier meal at the beginning of the day, as opposed to a lighter salad, cereal, whatever, at evening time.
Cereal for supper so you can go into a sugar coma and drift off to sleep, Rose.
Exactly. That's exactly what happens, too. Give me my Lucky Charms.
Turn it around, have the big meal in the morning. Alice Lichtenstein, what about that? We used to always hear breakfast is the most important meal of the day and, have a big, well-rounded breakfast. Was that true or was that just food industry marketing?
Well, I think they're different strokes for different folks, and it works for some people. It doesn't necessarily work for other people, particularly if somebody doesn't have a lot of time to prepare breakfast so that they end up with something that's nutritionally not as sound as we would hope. So the whole thing comes back to a whole dietary pattern. It's not necessarily just what we eat in the morning. We hear now that foods that are traditionally eaten in the morning, we eat at night. It's really that whole picture, number one, energy balance, that we consume the right amount of calories so that we maintain body weight. And then however we distribute it within the day, it's dictated on personal tastes, circadian rhythms, work schedules, and absolute and availability. So I don't think we can have one size fits all for everyone.
Michael in Augusta, Georgia. Michael, you're on.
Hi there, Tom.
Hi.
I was just wondering if there was an alternative to whole grains for people who eat gluten-free that isn't cereal-based. I have to eat gluten-free because I have Hashimoto's thyroiditis.
Okay.
And I would like to have something savory for breakfast, and I was wondering if there is anything gluten-free that would be in that category.
Mary Alice, help us here. Gluten-free, savory for Michael and Augusta.
Well, I'm not a nutritionist, but I would think one of the Asian rice-based breakfasts might be really great. I mean, I have a bowl of leftover rice with, and you heat up an egg, you throw that on, you put some nori seaweed on it.
Japanese
I'm not
style.
Sure that would work for you, but I think it certainly works for me.
Alice?
There are some other options, and I don't have it off the top of my head what the gluten-free grains are, but there are a number of grains that are gluten-free. Just go on the website. You'll be able to find them. Then whether you prepare them as a porridge or whether you buy some of the gluten-free cereals, you'll still be able to get the benefit of a whole grain. You'll be able to get something that's not necessarily sweet, and then you can customize it by adding various different components to it.
Devin,
it shouldn't be hard.
Devin, what do you see in what's being sold and bought in this country that may be indicators of where tastes are going, if they're going away from the traditional?
Well, I just see, again, that it seems as though sales of almost every sort of breakfast food are going up, except for cereal. It's just a huge fragmentation of the breakfast occasion, as they say, in the industry. And I think, I agree with your other guests that it is becoming sort of a more artisanal a meal. And I don't know. People just seem as though they're just really going to make their own breakfast. It's almost in sort of a narcissistic way. But I think it's hard to point to one thing.
I'm fascinated by how people go through chapters here. As we're told that one thing or another is or is not healthy, we look for some other way to go. It's something we do. I can remember 20 years ago when oatmeal, the heart-healthy thing, and I just ate oatmeal like crazy for 6 months, and I must have gained 15 pounds, right? A big bowl of oatmeal in the morning. But people go in all kinds of directions, Mary, and maybe generations within their own lifetime about what's their go-to.
That's right. And I think some of the orthodoxies are not fixed in time. So orthodoxy keeps changing. This is why I remember when Jane Brody of the New York Times wrote that coffee was really bad for you, it was going to give you pancreatic cancer or something. And then 3 weeks later, everybody took their coffee machines and threw them in the closet. 3 weeks later, we brought them out because she said the studies weren't definitive. And now coffee is seen as having like at least six wonderful things it can do for you, only if you have 5 cups a day. So everything has its moment. I think one of the problems about nutrition and orthodoxies is that there's a morality behind them that we espouse, sometimes very fanatically, mm-hmm. and then you have to let it go, and then you feel kind of hypocritical and confused. I think everything in moderation, as Aristotle once said.
Mui goes for a protein shake, vanilla protein powder, half and half, frozen coconut and frozen spinach. Everybody's got their way. Carolyn says unsweetened soy milk and blueberries, kimun tea. Susan in Madison, Connecticut. You're on the air, Susan.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I grew up in a large family, and my father was the breakfast cooker, and every morning we had, poached egg on toast, something protein-oriented. And when I raised my kids, I did the same thing, and I think everybody has time to make breakfast. You just have to get up earlier. So my kids either had a meat and an egg, a breakfast burrito. I would make oatmeal pancakes with cottage cheese, all sorts of stuff. And I knew they weren't going to eat lunch at school. They were too busy. So this way,
I knew there was like this big protein that would carry them through their day.
The mother's comfort, knowing that it's right there, it's planted, it's in.
Yeah. And I do the same thing today, every day, because I work outside for a living. And so I have like ham and egg on a whole wheat muffin. And, you know, every day I eat something that's got protein in it.
And off you go. Susan, I appreciate your call very much. Alice, here's another question on that front from Jim, who says, please ask about the role of protein. He says, a nutritionist he's citing here recommended protein-heavy breakfast with fewer carbs as a way of avoiding a sluggish and lethargic start to the day. What about protein and breakfast, Alice?
Well, I think it's very hard to isolate one individual component of breakfast and how it's going to carry you through the day. Some people feel that they need a certain amount of fat at breakfast, and that's what's going to carry them through. In general, we as Americans consume plenty of protein. So whether you choose to make sure you have it in the morning or other times during the day, probably it's something that's very individual. But, Tom, one of the things you brought up was that you started eating a lot of oatmeal and gained weight. I think one of the things we have to remember, whether it be oatmeal or whether it be an egg or two every other day or whether it be more whole grain cereal, is that we have to, if we increase something in our diet, we have to remember to take something else out or we're not going to be very happy with the outcome.
I'm part of the bandwagon that's gone to Greek yogurt and fruit these days. How's that look nutrition-wise, Alice?
That looks very good nutrition-wise because you've got a lot of the Greek yogurt is fat-free, which means you're avoiding the saturated fat. And then if you're adding fruit to it, you've got the fiber in the fruit, the nutrients in the fruit, so you're probably doing very well. Plus, Greek yogurt is quite high in protein.
Americans very willing to look around for non-traditional options these days. Mary Amy writes to us on Twitter, says, I'm more interested in what people eat for breakfast in non-Western countries. Let's look a little more in that direction, Mary.
Well, I'm really fascinated. I do a lot of work on Japanese food. My two favorite breakfasts are both Japanese. One of them is the sort of the iconic Japanese thing, which is rice, miso soup, which couldn't be better for you, with a little tofu in it, perhaps, and some pickles. And pickles, as we know, there's a fermentation fad going on. Everybody knows that fermentation produces things that are very valuable for our bodies. So there you are. You've got this complete balance in the Japanese breakfast. It may be hard for an American to get used to it first, but they'll throw an egg in for you. If you go to a Japanese cafe, you get the other best breakfast, which is a mile-high piece of toast and an egg and salad. And I like that the Japanese think salad's important.
I've seen salad showing up more at restaurants offering green salads now at breakfast, which I do not recall at all from not very long ago.
That's right. I think we used to be very sort of dogmatic about where things fit in our day, in our diet. And, you know, salad was for this and savory things were for that. And we really are messing up with our orthodoxies, which is really delightful.
Thinking about some more non-Western to Amy's question, what Japanese, you might have a little piece of cooked fish in there as well, some green tea or... You go to China, you're going to have congee, that rice porridge, which can have all kinds of stuff in it. Korea, kimchi, spinach, some spicy cucumbers. Or India, you might have dosa, that sort of a crepe, thin crepe made out of lentils. Lots of ways of going there. Paul in New Haven, Connecticut. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing?
Okay.
I think missing the whole point of all this, it's really who killed Tony the Tiger. And I feel that really in the end... people kind of eat what they want. I feel that the show today sounds more like a food schmooze than it does really get into the issue.
What's the issue to your mind, Paul?
It's milk. I think I don't eat cereal anymore because of milk. I used to eat it at night. I used to have it in the morning. A lot of my friends used to. So
are you lactose intolerant?
I think everybody is in a certain way. People just, their stomach gets upset. I mean, if the issue really was people eating better, then McDonald's wouldn't be doing well. I think the masses in this country don't eat as well as the people that call in your show. And I generally feel that that's really the issue. That's why cereal's not doing well.
Milk. Alice, what about it? What portion of the population has trouble with milk, lactose?
It doesn't tend to be a large portion of the population, and particularly it manifests in older individuals, adults, and they're the ones that tend to more likely consume things like Greek yogurt, regular yogurt, cottage cheese, and cheese, which are all made from milk, and they have relatively low lactose content. The important thing with dairy products is they are a good source of high-quality protein, of calcium, other minerals, and vitamin D if they're fortified with the vitamin D.
Devin, you're watching Kellogg. What do you think they're going to do? If they're really going to get serious, their guys come or gal has come back from Chobani now. If they got a better idea than peanut butter and jelly Pop-Tarts?
Well, their plan right now is to revive their two biggest, I guess two of their biggest brands. Their big success stories in the 90s were Special K, especially Special K with Special K Red Berries and also Kashi.
Red Berries, that was like dried fruit of some kind, strawberry or something?
Yeah, freeze-dried fruit. And that just took off for them in the 90s. And so this is at a time when marketing sugary cereals to kids, this isn't working like it did in the 50s and 60s. They started marketing they created Special K the Red Berries, and then they created all these Special K spinoffs. I list them all in the article. I can't even think of them all now, but one of them was a pink lemonade mix, a Special K pink lemonade mix. They also bought Kashi, and that was considered a health food brand at the time. But both of those brands are doing very badly now, and a lot of it has to do with. They did well because they were diet brands, and a decade ago, that was hot. People just aren't interested in diet food for breakfast anymore. I mean, we're talking about a lot of the things that people are talking about now are fattening. Well, people don't care about that so much anymore, and that's killing Kashi, and it's killing Special K. So I don't know if their plan's going to work.
Mary White, what you're describing seems way beyond Special K. Where we're going, we don't need roads. We don't need Special K.
Well, you know what's interesting is it goes back and forth between, you know, breakfast as comfort, nostalgia, get the kids out the door with something they will eat in them, and that means maybe more sweet than not. And then this, so you've got that side of it, and then this high, stringent idea that, you know, breakfast should represent your highest nutritional goals. There's a contrast. There's a conflict.
Somewhere along that spectrum, Americans all looking for breakfast homes. Mary White with Boston University. Thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you very much.
Alice Lichtenstein with Tufts University. Thank you, Alice. Thanks a lot.
A pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.
And Devin Leonard with Bloomberg Businessweek. Devin, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot.
Good breakfast, everybody. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thanks for joining us.